Hi, people. Welcome back to Dr. Sam's Musings. I hope you've had an amazing past few weeks. I honestly thought that I would be able to carry on recording and pushing out the episodes in Ramadan, but it just wasn't flowing. It just wasn't flowing. So I decided to just take an unannounced break. And yeah, I'm back. If you followed my Q&A session the past few days on Instagram, then you already know what the topic for today is. I promised to do a topic on bridging the gap, especially in marriage, because it was something that has come up quite frequently in conversations I've had with some women. And when I say bridge the gap, I mean literally just close the gap between you and your spouse. And I'll explain as the conversation or as the episode goes on. The first thing I will say to you is that, especially if you're newlywed or if you've been married for less than 5 years, and not to try to sound like a veteran, but obviously the longer you spend in something, the more lessons you get from it, the more knowledge you gain from it, except that you're not looking to gain knowledge, or except that you're not being observant. So I dare say that someone that has been in marriage for 20 years has a lot more experience and a lot more knowledge than someone that has been in marriage for 5 years. No matter how many books you've read, no matter how many, courses you've taken, no matter how much you think you know, nothing trumps experience. Nothing trumps, practical, practical advice. So I will say that if you are newlywed, you need to take counsel from people that have gone ahead of you. Wise counsel, obviously, and not counsel from everybody else, because if you talk to five people, they'll give you five different advices. So you need to, or five different pieces of advice. So you need to learn to be discerning. I know the kind of people that you talk to, people that, you can see, walking the talk. You can see how their relationships are improving. But one thing I have to say, honestly, is that if you're talking to someone that only has positives to tell you about their marriage, run. There's no marriage on the face of this earth that will ever be all positive. It's just not, it wasn't designed to be that way. And a marriage that will be all positive is not a healthy marriage. There's no growth in that marriage. There's no reality in that marriage. There's no conflict resolution in that marriage. There's no bond strengthening in that marriage. So those are not the kind of people you want to listen to. You want to listen to people that will tell you, that will not scare you by telling you only about bad things, but will balance it out very, very naturally and very, very, realistically, by telling you about the bad times, but more importantly, how they handled the bad times and how they came out better. So you don't want to look for people that will tell you, I beg, it's not what they do. Men will change. Men are scum. Da, 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 da. No. And you also don't want people that will be like, oh my God, everything's going to be okay. You want a healthy middle, course. You want someone that, they might lean towards more positive, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I'm thankful and I'm blessed to say that my marriage is definitely a lot more positive than negative. Definitely a lot more, alhamdulillah. So, and I don't feel the need to lie about that to, pass any message across. But there are a lot of negatives as well. And, I think that for me, what has given me the most growth in marriage is how we deal with those negatives, how we, resolve conflict, how we deal with the things that we have no control over, the things that one person brings to the table, the things that both of us bring to the table. How do we deal with those things? And one of the things that you will experience in marriage is you will grow apart in different ways. You will outgrow one another in different ways. You will feel like there's no more connection. You feel like there's nothing. You feel like you don't have common interests. And I think that I'm quite positive that if I talk to 10 women that have been married for 10 years and above, at least eight or nine of them will relate to what I'm saying. And the point of this, the reason behind this is that who you are on the first day of your marriage is different from who you'll be in the fifth year of your marriage, in the 10th year of your marriage, in the 15th year of your marriage. You grow, you evolve. Both of you will grow and evolve, sometimes in the same direction and sometimes in opposite directions, just different directions. They don't have to be opposite. So, for example, spirituality. For me, I've always kind of been spiritual. I was raised in a family that, you know, even when I didn't realize we're planting the seeds of Islam in me, we're actively planting the seeds of Islam in me. And when I became a late teenager, I became very, very, very interested in finding my own path by myself, understanding the deen by myself. So I've always, even before marriage, I've always kind of been on my own journey. But I find that women generally in Islam, and this was corroborated in my, you know, madrasa as well, women generally are more inclined towards spirituality. And I guess it comes also with the nature that we have. You know, we're emotional beings. We worry more. We're anxious more. So we tend to be more prayerful. We tend to seek more solutions and things like that. But spirituality-wise, I can honestly, I know that I grew at a faster pace than my husband. And for a long time, it wasn't something that bothered me. It wasn't something I just thought, you know, everybody, I mean, it's not like he's not a practicing Muslim, he's a good Muslim. I just got the itch, the urge to do a lot more extra. And he was okay with, look, I'm doing what I can do, you know. And for a long time, it wasn't, you know, it didn't bother me. Do your thing, I do my thing. The things that we do together, alhamdulillah. But I grew to a point where I was also craving a spiritual connection. I was craving spiritual intimacy. I was craving certain things that I felt like, look, these are things that we can do that will not only strengthen us as a couple in this dunya, but would also strengthen us, you know, towards holding hands to Jannah and things like that. And I'm the kind of person that I also like to be very objective. I like to see things from other people's perspectives. And I try to, a lot of times I'll be like, oh, you know what, I didn't want to force, I didn't want to push, I didn't want to bully, because I've seen people that bully their spouses using religion or spirituality, and I hate that. So what I tried to do was, you know, show him the effects that those things had upon my life. Show him how happy they made me. Show him how connected they made me feel to Allah. Show him how, you know, the kind of responses I got from doing certain things, and, you know, just constantly calling him to it. And one thing about me is that as I grew in my marriage as well, you know, initially you'll just complain about something. I'll say, oh, I'll say to my husband, oh, I wish you don't do this. I wish you do that. But as I grew again, I realized, you know, I'm not just going to point out the problem. I'm going to point out the problem and offer a solution. So I will say something like, I wish you would do this, and you can do this by doing X, Y, Z. So when I wanted a deeper spiritual connection, instead of just complaining about it or talking about it, I would say, oh, babe, I would love it if we could sit down and read our Quran together. Sometimes you read one ayah and I read one ayah. Things like that. I would offer the idea to him. And, you know, men sometimes don't like to be told what to do. So he'll be like, oh, yeah, I've heard, da-da-da-da-da. And maybe for, like, some weeks, we won't do anything about it. And then one day he'll just come and say, okay, yes, let's read Quran together. It was a gentle way of bridging the gap. It was a very, you know, I would hold space for you until you're ready way of bridging the gap. And it might not be spiritual for you. It might be financial. Some women move way faster than their men when it comes to finances. And some men leave their women behind. Like, both of you could have been struggling to make your first million when you got married. And then all of a sudden, a guy hits one contract and he's rolling with 100 millionaires. And you're just there still trying to make sense of your business or your career. It's always a lot easier when it's the man that grows faster financially. When it's the woman, it becomes a whole different ballgame. Because a lot of things now come to play. The man's ego can come to play. The woman might begin to see her husband in a certain way. He can't provide for me. You know, depending a lot, obviously, on the previous dynamics of the marriage, finances and whatnot do not change some people. But finances are one of the biggest causes of discord in marriage. So you can outgrow your spouse financially. You can outgrow your spouse physically. We see many marriages where the man is fit and, you know, working out and whatnot. And the woman, because of being a homemaker, making babies, taking care of babies and all that, combining with work, combining with taking care of the home, she just doesn't have the time, not the resources to, you know, work out or do whatever like the husband does. And so you see that the man is really, really, really looking fit and buff. And the woman is, as they say, letting herself go. when they got married, they were this young, you know, hot looking couple. But you know, you see them 10 years down the line, and the man is still looking like, and the woman is looking like his mommy or his older sister. It happens. People outgrow each other nutritionally, physically, and all sorts of ways. You can also outgrow each other intellectually. You just realize that the kind of conversations you're having are not working for you anymore. You want to talk about deeper stuff. You want to talk about, you know, important things. Where are we? What are we doing? What are we investing in? What kind of schools we want the children to go to? You know, you want to have those conversations. And your husband is just there like, please stop stressing me. He wants to talk about news, and he wants to talk about what he saw on Instagram. And you're just like, all these things are too superficial for me. People outgrow each other intellectually as well. So what do you do when this happens in your marriage? And you have to realize as well that it's not a final stop. Like I said, I've always said this, marriage is in phases. Like who you are as a couple in your first 5 years will be completely different from who you are 5 to 10 years, because life happens. You know, the experiences that you have, you might have more children, you might have had one or two major fights, somebody might have done something, you know, major things happen in marriage that will shape who you people are going to be in the next phase of your life. So it's not when you get to a point where you feel like, oh my God, we've grown apart, where we don't have anything in common anymore. It's not a final destination. It's just, okay, this is where we are now. And if you want to change that, if you want to move past that, then you have to learn to bridge the gap. You have to learn to understand who you are, understand who your spouse is, and bring that together to learn how to bridge the gap. So you can, and how do you do that? Like, first of all, you have to understand that interests don't have to match. You don't have to like the same things. Your husband does not have to like watching K-drama with you, for example. You don't have to like watching football with him. That's not how it works. But you can support each other's interests. You can show interest in their interests. You know, you can let them know that, look, I know that you enjoy this thing. This is your thing, and I'm supporting you in it. So, it's, for example, I don't particularly enjoy watching soccer. I can watch a good football game. If Nigeria is playing, for example, I will sit down and watch. But my son and my husband are Arsenal fans. I can sit down and watch an Arsenal match with them and scream Saka and all those things just to feel among. I can do those things, but it's not something that if they said top 10 things that you like to do, I'll say I like to sit down and watch soccer. But what I can do is if they're watching soccer, I can give them space. I can decide, you know, you guys do your thing. I'm going to go work on my book without making my husband feel like, oh, you're watching football. I wish you'd spend time with me. That's his thing. He enjoys it. Let him watch his football. I can even say, do you guys want some snacks? And I give them some snacks. Or when we're having conversation, I can just let them know that, look, I know that you enjoy this thing. Or when is the next Arsenal match? Oh, so you know, you let them know that, look, this is your thing. I enjoy it. I like that you enjoy it. It's your thing. We don't have to do it together, but I like that you have something that you enjoy. But it becomes a bit frustrating when you do that for one person and the person doesn't do the same for you. I get it. But you also have to understand that these things sometimes come naturally to some people and they don't come naturally to some. Me, it's all these, the things that I say, and I don't come on here to sound, it's Dr. Sam's musing, so it's what Dr. Sam feels and, you know, does, right? The things that I do are very natural to me. They're things that come naturally to me. And I've come to realize that not everybody is like me. We're some total of our experiences of how we were raised, the things that we've been exposed to, and our own natural selves, you know, the core of us. All of these things are the things that make up who we are and who we present to the world. So the fact that I'm very nurturing and I'm able to look at a situation and think about certain things does not mean that the next person can. And this was another thing that I learned, you know, in the early years of my marriage, because you cannot expect someone to give what they don't have. You cannot expect someone to be you. You cannot expect someone to match your energy. They don't have the energy. Me, I'm very energetic. I like to plan. I like to do certain things. And I had to go to the point where I'm like, this is you, Sam. Your husband does not have to be that person. Your husband does not have to have the same energy or the same vibe as you, but he can support you. He can not put you down when you want to do certain things. He can come along for the ride, but don't expect him to always match your energy. So I learned how to vocalize my wants very, very early in marriage. Like, I stopped doing that. He should know. You should know. No. You set yourself up for a serious disaster. So, for example, if I feel like I'm supportive of your hobbies, if I feel like I support you, I bring you snacks when you're watching football, I ask you questions. Oh, are you guys still top of the league? You da 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 da. Also, if you lose this match against Man City, what is that going to mean? If I ask you those questions or anything that you like, my husband is a cyclist, for example. He loves to cycle. My husband likes anything fitness. If I ask you questions, as what's the difference between this bike and that bike? Also, are you riding today? If I ask you those questions and I feel like you don't show as much interest in the things that I like, then I'm going to sit down and talk to you about it. I'm going to be like, I don't feel like you support my hobbies like I support yours. And to them, a lot of times, it's just like, where is she coming from? It's like, you're speaking gibberish. Like, where is this coming from? And then when you explain it to them, and me, I like to explain in analogies and putting the other person in my shoes. So I will say things like, imagine if you were doing X, Y, Z and I didn't, how would you feel? And I think that that connects with my husband a lot. So I would give those instances and be like, okay, I would really like it if when I did so and so, you did so and so. Like, it would make me feel really, really good. And that's how you begin to show them how you like, you know, to be appreciated or how you like to feel supported and things like that. It's not about expecting everybody to want to do the same things. It's understanding that our interests might grow apart. Our inclinations might not always tally. Our opinions might not always be the same, but we can offer support. We can show interest in what the other person is doing. You can also bridge the gap by, you know, if it's something that you see. Okay, so for example, so because I do a lot of unofficial or non-professional counseling, I'm always having to tell, you know, especially the younger ladies, I'm always having to tell them to learn how to effectively communicate, to learn. See, this is the one thing that will make or break your marriage. Let's put aside the fact that things will happen that would, you know, even communication, you'll be like, oh, what is that? You know, but 50% of your conflicts will be resolved if you know how to resolve your conflict. That's just the truth. If you know how to resolve conflict. But a lot of people don't know how to resolve conflict. A lot of people go into discussions or conversations to push their points across, to be right, to win. That's why a lot of arguments just become fights. Nothing is resolved. There's no closure. It's just, I want to say what I want to say and I'm right. Whether I admit it to myself or not, I feel like I'm right and I am right. So it's a constant back and forth just to get the last word in. And in a marriage, that's not the point of having arguments. The point of having arguments is to understand that you might be right, I might be right. Nobody has to be right or wrong, but my opinions are valid. Your opinions are valid. How can we have differing opinions but respect each other enough to move forward? Sometimes the other person might admit, oh yeah, your opinion actually makes a lot more sense. And sometimes the both people might just be like, look, I like my opinion, I'm going to stick with my opinion. And it's very okay to agree to disagree on things, but the point is, how do we bridge the gap and move forward? Okay, I like to sleep with the light on. I like to sleep with the light off. I don't ever want to sleep with the light off. You don't ever want to sleep with the light on. What can we do? I'm not going to force you to sleep with the light on. This is a hypothetical situation, by the way. I'm not using examples about myself and my husband, except where I expressly, you know, mentioned that. But I'm just saying that if you were, for example, a couple that somebody likes the light on, somebody likes the light off, and there's constant drama. Oh God, can you turn off the lights? But I'm already turn off the lights. I'm reading da-da-da-da-da-da. Every day, fight. Then you can reach a compromise. You can decide, you know what, on so and so day, Mondays we turn off the lights, Tuesdays we don't, reach a compromise. Or you can say, okay, you know, I like to sleep by 10 a.m. Can we get into bed by 10 p.m.? Can we do this? We get into bed by 9 p.m. or 9:30 p.m. If you want to read, can you please try and read till maybe like 11 so that we can turn the lights and I can get some good sleep? And if you want to continue reading, maybe it's just fair for you to maybe step into another room to continue in. I think these are ways that you can begin to reach compromise. It's just like air conditioning as well. Some people like it really cold and some people don't. And it's, you know, instead of fighting about it, you know, I can instead buy you an extra blanket and say, babe, because I love you and I don't want us to sleep in separate bedrooms, but I also don't want to be uncomfortable because I will begin to feel, you know, some sort of contempt. If I'm sweating every night, for example, if I was the kind of person that liked air conditioning, I don't even know whether I'm
team pro or team against air conditioning. I guess it depends on the weather. But some people like it really, really cold, and some people cannot stand, you know, and you don't want to sleep in separate rooms. So I can say, you know what, I'll just go out one day and buy you a really nice blanket and even tie it with a bow and bring it and say, you know, this is for you. You know, it makes you feel safe. Like, I understand that you struggle when I want the AC on so high. So on those nights, can you maybe use an extra blanket? And the days that we agree that we'll turn off the air conditioning or whatever, you know, I understand your stance as well and things like that. And these are even like the simpler scenarios. So if you outgrow your spouse, for example, financially, and you need to bridge that gap. You know, if you're the woman, for example, and you outgrow your spouse financially, you're making tons more money than your husband, and you're trying not to let it affect your relationship, what do you do? You know, the first thing is you don't emasculate your man. You don't make him feel less than a man, especially if he's a man that is trying. Yes, there's some lazy bums that have no business being married. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about a man that is doing the best that he can, but Allah has just not blessed him as much as he has blessed you. What do? You don't emasculate him. You don't. And emasculation, people always make the mistake of assuming that emasculation always comes from a negative, you know, perspective. It's not always that. Sometimes we give nice gestures that actually emasculate men. If you say to your husband, for example, if you don't mind, I'll pay the children's school fees, he might feel emasculated. You feel like you're doing something kind. You feel like you're offering, but he might feel emasculated. So what you should do, what I would do if I was ever in that situation, was I will sit down with my husband and say, look, we have to have a conversation about this. I don't want this thing to be an issue for our marriage. I don't want it to be something that we would end up like those couples. I know that you're going through tough times. I know, and you know that I have a lot of wealth. I know what Islam says about responsibility. I know that you're trying. I know. How can we work together as a couple to get past this until, you know, what would I say or what would I do that will make you feel like I was disrespectful? If you needed help, can we have like a secret word or a secret gesture that will let me know that you're struggling with asking for help, but you actually need help? Those are the kind of things that I would do if I was ever in that situation, because you just don't know where you put a foot wrong. And you sitting down and talking to your man about stuff like that, I think expresses you seeing him and you respecting him enough that you don't want to do anything that will make him feel a certain way. I know that there's some men that people cannot talk to. I know that even with all of this, some men will still, but I'm talking about, you know, let's just assume that. And when you've done all that you can, I mean, what else can you do? You know, but I'm just talking about how I think that I would handle that situation. I would actually sit down with you and just put all the cards on the table. Look, I know. And I don't want you to ever think that I'm lording money over you or whatever over you. How can we work together? What should we put money in an account? What should we do? Chike, now you talk about it as a couple. He will say, please don't ever say this. I would feel some type of way. You can even come up with a scenario. If I ever said this, how would you feel? You'll say, you know, things like that. That's how you bridge the gap. And even, you know, physically, as regards intimacy, couples really, really, really grow apart in this part of marriage as well. Like, one person wants to be more experimental, one person wants to try new things and new tricks and whatnot, and the other person is comfortable in their comfort zone. The other person doesn't want to budge, or the other person thinks that, you know, what the other one wants is a bit too kinky or too whatever. So what do you do? How do you bridge the gap when that happens? Again, discussion. Like, you have to talk it out. You have to be able to say, you know what, when we started, this was enough for me, but now I want more. Like, I desire more, I want more, and I don't want to crave it and not get it, and because I feel like that's dangerous. I don't want to be dissatisfied with our intimate life, you know, what. And you can talk about it and find, okay, why is it that you're not willing to try this with me? What is the problem? And it might just be cultural. It might be how the other person was raised. It might just be, oh, I don't know how, and I'm scared that I won't like it. You know, so when you know the crux of the matter, then you know better how to deal with it. But you can't just assume oh my God, it's so boring. He doesn't want to do these things. I want to do these things. Da, 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 da. And then before you know it, they're talking to some therapist saying, oh, my husband wasn't adventurous enough. And then I met this guy. I'm not saying that's how it always goes. I'm just saying that you haven't addressed the matter the way that you should. And you're thinking only about yourself and how you can get what you want. So I'm saying that if you grow apart intimately as well, there are a lot of intimacy coaches now. And even if you don't want to use an intimacy coach, you can subtly and very beautifully introduce the things that you like to your spouse, you know, very respectfully. After you've had a conversation about it, you can say, okay, can I show you what I'd like? Can I, you know, and if it's too much, then we don't have to do it. You know, things like that. And you slowly begin to explore together and do things together. You'll be amazed at so many things that people will say, oh my God, I could never, or I would never, that they are evering and they are loving. So don't assume that, you know, it's a destiny. Oh, he's never going to try. Oh, she's never, I've outgrown him in this, I've outgrown him in that. No. Have you tried? Have you had a conversation about it? Have you held space for him? Have you try to educate? Have you tried to introduce? You know, a lot of times you just assume it's very easy for people to say, oh, I feel like I've outgrown him. I'm not attracted to him anymore. No, it's not a destination. That's just where you are right now. And if you really want to get past it, there are many things that you can do. There are many things that you can do. And I'm going to conclude on this by saying that, you know, we need to, and this is what I'm hoping to do. I don't know how. I don't want to start taking on anything about marriage, but I do know that I'm having a sit down with Newlywed soon, one of my, you know, friends who is a marital coach. And what we aim to do is just to present a realistic picture of marriage to people. I hate this narrative that we're all trying to pretend like everything is perfect. No marriage is perfect. Like, I know that your marriage is not perfect. You know that my marriage. So why are we pretending? What's the point? I'm not saying come out and talk about your problems to the world. I'm not saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm just saying, why can't we have safe spaces where we come and we talk about these things and we look for practical ways to help ourselves? Some people have been blessed with more wisdom and knowledge than others. Some people have had experiences that some people are just getting to. And the things that they share might help them navigate it faster. So I'm saying, why can't we, you know, have those things? Why do we always have to pretend and then sometimes when we hear about other people's issues, we like to gossip and smirk and forget that we have our own issues in our own marriages. Marriage is beautiful, but it's life, and life is not meant to be perfect. Life was never, in this world, was never designed to be perfect. So you trying to aim for perfection, you trying to aim for happily ever after, is going to give you the worst sense of disappointment ever. You have to understand that being married means jumping hurdles. Okay, today, are we going to jump it solo? Are we going to jump it, you know, easily? Or are we going to fall as we try to cross the hurdle? Or are we, you know, that's part of marriage. It's having great times and hitting a bad patch and working around it and getting better. And I also have to say that not all marriages can be fixed. And I know that people sometimes don't like to hear this. Not all marriages were destined to be happily ever after. That's the truth. This is something that I hold.